Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today on the show, I'm joined with Corey Yazuno, a mother who's got a son on the spectrum and has also written the book from his perspective of being someone on the spectrum. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and I'll see you on the other side. See you there. Hello and welcome to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Corey Yazuno, a mother who's got a son on the spectrum and an author. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to talk with you.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and then we'll get on with the show.
Okay. So I am Japanese. I was born in Japan. I came to the States when I was 5 years old. I didn't speak any English. And then I grew up in New York, Westchester, New York. I got married, had kids, and have a son that's, I have two sons, one who is on the spectrum. And I've been seeing him sort of grow and seeing all the differences and the experiences he's had. So I wrote a book that kind of compares me being isolated and wanting to fit in by learning how to speak English and becoming like American. And I relate that to my son, Daniel, trying to fit in. And I see him struggling and I know what it feels like firsthand to be different and stick out. And so I wanted to share those stories in hopes of raising awareness and making, well, as my son says, you know, if you write this book, are they going to be nicer to me? And so that was sort of the whole goal, is, you know, raising awareness and really talking about intentional inclusion and how can we make the world a better and more inclusive space for anybody, really, so that they can experience life fully like they should. So that is that's my brief history.
All right. When did you realize Daniel was on the spectrum?
That was early. So Daniel's my first son. And so I didn't know what to expect from, you know, any kind of kid. In fact, I thought like there's nothing wrong with him, except I was on a phone call with my sister-in-law and her daughter, my niece, is about 5 months older than Daniel. And she was talking about, you know, how, oh, my daughter is having a hard time napping. And I said, oh, you know, Daniel doesn't have a hard time napping, but he doesn't really point to things. And I see the other kids doing that. And he also doesn't seem to answer me when I call him or like, look, you know. And she's a pediatrician. So she sort of was like, wait a minute, that's something, you know. And so she called me back a couple of weeks later and was like, is that still going on? I said, yeah. She said, you may want to just get him checked out, see what's going on. And I live in the DC area. And so we are right by the NIH and they had an autism study at that time. So I took him there to be evaluated basically. And they realized that there were some delays happening. And so pretty early on, like we were right at the get-go for early intervention.
All right. When you got him diagnosed and when you told him later in life, what was his reaction?
Actually, there's a funny story about that in my book. There's a book called All Cats Have Asperger's. Do you know that book?
No.
It's like a children's book and it has cats doing all these crazy things. And it talks about like, you know, it's okay to be different. These cats are, you know, they have Asperger's or, and it's sort of like a gateway book to talk to your child about being on the spectrum. So we always thought that it was easier for him to know, what his issues were called so that he didn't feel like, you know, what's happening? Why am I the only one? So we get this book and it's really cute. It's got all these cats. And we said to him, hey, Daniel, you know, you are a little bit different and you react to things in different ways and you're more sensitive to this and sensitive to that. And this is this book, All Cats Have Asperger's. And he was, the whole concept went right over his head. And he said, but Mom, how did they get these cats to do all these things in these photographs? So it was really funny. But today, you know, now that he's in high school, he definitely accepts the fact that he's on the spectrum and he wears a bracelet that says that he's on the spectrum. And he's very vocal about it. And he's like, oh, you know, I may have said something weird. It's because I'm on the spectrum. Or he's very open about it and tries, you know, uses that as a way to, I guess, explain some of his behavior if somebody gives him, you know, a look or something like that. So
what is it like raising a son who's on the spectrum?
Wow. Okay. So that's a very good question. Now that I have a son that is on the spectrum and one that is neurotypical, it's really interesting. It's not easy. It's very frustrating. And there's some times when a lot of times when we butt heads, but it's sort of given me a different look at the way I see people, right? So before, I may not have been so mindful of other parents and their struggles. Before I was in my world and, you know, I was doing my life and that's it. Now I feel like I watch out for other kids. Like if we go to a theater and, well, before pandemic, and I saw a kid that I thought was maybe spectrum, you know, I'd keep an eye out for that kid just to make sure nothing, you know, nothing happened. Or I feel like I've become more aware of other people and their differences. And I try really hard to be there when other people can't be there, because I feel like for my son, a lot of things happen and nobody's there to advocate for him because it happens in life, you know? So as much as I can do that for somebody else, that's, I don't know, like super uber protector of kids on the spectrum.
Now, what has prompted you to write the book?
So the book, my shameless plug, Autism with a Side of Sushi. So what made me write it was, you know, I was thinking like when I was younger and I would come to school with these Asian looking foods, you know, a lot of the kids would be like, ew, what is that? Is that sushi? Like gross. And I would be like, oh, it's just my food. But then now fast forward, I don't know, some years, everybody eats sushi, or, you know, sushi restaurants are everywhere and it's become so commonplace. And I was thinking about that and I was thinking, wouldn't it be awesome if the idea of autism and that the fact that kids are autistic and adults are autistic was like sushi. And like, you know, fast forward a couple of years, everyone would be like, oh, autism, like whatever, you know, my neighbor is autistic and my sister's friend, you know, her babysitter is autistic or whatever. So I just, and then it's become so common, like sushi is now, I mean, like it's, appears that these things can happen where the universe is so grossed out by one thing, but then all of a sudden is like accepting. I'm not saying the universe is grossed out about people on the spectrum, but I'm thinking if it makes them uncomfortable now, maybe we can figure out a way to make it more accepted and, you know, appreciated.
Has Daniel read the book?
No, he was pretty funny. He was like, okay, you can read the book. But I think he didn't really think about what that really meant. So at a certain point, we got into a big fight about, I don't even remember. And I was like, well, I'm just going to put that in the book about like temper tantrums or whatever. And then, and that was when I was writing it. And then all of a sudden it clicked in his head and he was like, you're doing what? You can't write that. I don't want you to put all my temper tantrums in there and this and that. And I was like, we talked about this. Anyway, so when he finally realized like what was happening, he basically canceled my book. He was like, "You can't write it. I don't want my stories out there." And I was like, "Okay, they're your stories. They're my stories too, but they're also yours. So we won't. I will not embarrass you. I will not write this book." And then we kind of like calmed down and we started talking about it. And I was saying how, you know, it's really helpful to other parents and other people to learn about like how normal it is. Like we live a normal life, you know, you're on the spectrum, but like we eat breakfast, we eat lunch, we have tantrums, whatever. And so he went through the book with me and was like, no, no. Okay. You can tell this story. No. And then, after I got his like second approval and I rewrote like the rest of the book, then he was okay with it. But, you know, he doesn't particularly love to read. So he was like, I'm not reading it. And I said, that's fine.
All right. Has he found his hyper-focus?
He's found a few. I think he really, 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 really loves Disney World. That is his passion. He loves Disney World. And it's hard because a lot, okay, this is going to sound like a gross generalization, but a lot of the kids that we interact with that are on the spectrum that are 16, they're like really into Legos or like really into video games or really into Pokemon. All of these things that Daniel's not into. So even within the spectrum, I have this child who's unique, right? So he loves this Disney World. He loves going there. He loves the rides. He loves recording the rides in 3D. He loves making those rides available on his YouTube channel for kids that, you know, also are into Disney. He likes the movies. He likes the songs, but mostly he likes Disney World and the rides and that kind of like, full immersion experience, you know, the ride, being on the ride with the pictures and the characters and, you know, so, and he also likes Hershey, that kind of like amusement parks, but mostly Disney.
Well, I mean, he's not alone. I mean, I'm not big into a lot of things either. And I have a plethora of different interests, but not Legos, not computers.
Yeah.
I'm not good at programming. So, I mean, I don't know what my special interest might just be my podcast. So, but he's not alone. There are a lot of tell him he's not alone with the Disney love. I had a cousin who had passed away. She was huge into Disney. The fact that her wedding had incorporated Disney characters and stuff like that. But she was a huge Disney lover.
Yeah. And there are people, I mean, you know, every time I go to Disney, I always ask the people that work there, like, you know, hey, would this be a good place for my son to work one day? That would be like his dream. And he wants to like create rides and stuff. So.
How does he handle being on the spectrum himself?
I think he has a hard time with it. You know, I think he's a teen. And life is hard for teenagers, right? I think we were just talking about before how it's an invisible disability. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Daniel is an upbeat, sweet kid. He's like really good at music and he has perfect pitch and he's like doing his life and living his, you know, everything he wants to do. And all of a sudden there's like a hiccup. Because he doesn't know what he did, but somebody else is offended or affected or something about something Daniel did, right? Whereas in Daniel's mind, he's just doing life. And so when these little, not little, sometimes big situations occur, he's really confused. Like, what just happened? And I think that on many levels, that's frustrating, right? Because if you don't know what you did and all of a sudden somebody's upset with you, even if you weren't on the spectrum, that's very upsetting. And then there's all these nuances and like social rules and stuff that's not written down and you're just supposed to know them. Like that's tough. That's tough to navigate. And it's also not something you think about asking, you know, it's not like I know these are the things I need to teach you before you go out in the world. It's only when we have a hiccup that I'm like, oh, I didn't know, you know, and so I think that it's a struggle, but at the same time, you know, he's like an amazing musician and he like loves to make these video clips and he has all these abilities, you know, and he can like hear the differences between a new metro and an old metro coming down the tracks, you know.
Wow. That kind of,
and so like he has all these special skills and he shines in those areas. And then, you know, like I said, it's like out of nowhere, something happens and we just never know what to expect, when to expect it, and then how to deal with it.
I mean, that kind of reminds me of one of my friends. I mean, he's got this really hypersensitive taste. He's able to literally eat something or even drink bottled water and be able to tell you the differences between the bottled water.
Wow.
That hearing he's got with the metro, that's part of his autism.
Yes.
It's like with me, I have a heightened sense of hearing, but not like that. Yeah. I also have a heightened sense of smell, which is bad, especially if you go into like a smoke-filled room or somebody smoking around you. It just really kicks up.
Yeah, definitely. And Daniel will tell you like which rides at Disney smell like what, right? And it's pretty cool. Like he'll be like, "Mom, do you smell the bromine in the water on It's a Small World?" And I was like, "Well, now I do. You know, I didn't before, but now I do." And he'll be like, he knows the different smells of metro and like it's
wow.
It's, yeah, so all of that is heightened for him.
I bet you when he first walks in, he's able to smell the fact that they pump chocolate in the air.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's a given thing that people don't really realize is Disney pumps the smell of chocolate in the air when you're walking down Main Street.
Main Street, yes. I know that place very well. I know a lot.
Now, does he also have ADHD?
You know, he has been diagnosed previously with ADHD, but Daniel is really rigid. And so I think that his need to sort of follow his routine and patterns kind of overpowers his ADHD, you know? However, like if it's an undesired task, like, oh, homework, he's like all over the place. So, but on like the day-to-day, it's more his rigidity that takes the front part of, you know, the front and center so that his ADHD is not that noticeable.
All right. Now, what kind of challenges has he faced growing up?
Wow. Okay. So I guess challenges growing up, making friends has been hard. Being in like a neurotypical environment, you know, and trying to understand the social cues and just like naturally falling into place has been hard. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of challenges with food. He only likes like very limited number of items. I mean, he'll eat enough, like he's full, but he doesn't eat a variety. Like I said, he's rigid. So he has a lot of rules. Like, for example, like he has to eat scrambled eggs made by me, and I have to start scrambling them at a certain time in his routine, right? Like he a bowl of granola, and he calls it clusters. It's specific. It's the only one he eats. And like, if I start scrambling the eggs before he starts eating the granola, that's not okay, right? So then I have to know, like, am I ready? Can I make it? You know, then I make the scrambled eggs, and then he can only eat it at the island and not at the table, because I don't want something about the light and the color and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so then this becomes a challenge, because when we travel, he won't eat the eggs. Like he won't, even if we're at a friend's house and I make the same eggs and the same, you know, it's like, that's just not, it's not, it's a rule, right? Like we only eat the eggs at my house, at the island, after this and this. So that's always been one of the big challenges, is to travel and be able to get his food that he will eat and enjoy, because he's got so many of these rules.
All right. How does he deal with overstimulation?
He likes to put on his noise canceling headphones, and he has his playlists, and he'll just go through his playlist, or he has video clips that he likes, sometimes if we're going to go get a shot for the doctor's office, there's some sort of clip in some show so he'll watch that to calm him down from this. Or if he's really upset, during a fight or something, he'll go to his room, turn on his calming music or whatever it is, and then he'll just chillax. So he knows, he's pretty good at once he recognizes it, then he's pretty good at bringing himself down.
All right. Does he have his own quiet place at home?
Yeah, he's got his room that he likes to go to. And then we have a basement that has all the stuff that my boys use. I don't even go down there. I don't know what's in there.
Does he have any sensory issues to light, to sound, to taste, to touch?
Yeah. So he definitely, like I said, the food is a big issue, and having specific kinds of food, and he can tell when cereals have been changed or whatever. He has the sensitivity to smell. He doesn't love loud noises. He used to wear earplugs. Now he just wears the headphones. So it's less, he doesn't stand out as much. But he doesn't like it when it's too hot. He doesn't like it when it's too cold. He doesn't like the feeling of wet bathing suit on his, once he gets out of the pool, he wants to change right away. A lot of that texture stuff is can bother him.
Now, how do you deal with that to help him get over those kind of sensory issues?
So I'm sure your mom has said this too. It's you got to pick your battles.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the food thing, I've been trying to work on that for so long, and it's really been tricky. So, for everything else, as long as I know what the triggers are, I can usually, figure out a way to work within the parameters, unless it's something that we cannot change. For example, if we're going to the beach and we're just, going to be in the car and he's going to have wet clothes and his feet are going to be sandy, there's nothing I can do about it. I just have to break it to him. This is what the situation is. If it's a situation where we're just going somewhere else and he can just bring an extra change of clothes and he can do whatever it is that he needs to do to get comfortable, whatever. What I always try to tell him is if you can tell me, and he can now, obviously, because he's 16 and he's talking, if you can explain to me what the situation is, I'm not mad at you. I'm just trying to make sure that we can figure something out, right? Everything is figure outable somehow. If you can just help me help you. So, and that's only when I'm being patient, right? When I'm busy and I'm dealing with the other one and I've my dog and my husband and whatever, then I'm just deal with yourself. And that's when we get into our nice big fights, but we're not perfect.
Now, how does his younger brother deal with him? Because I'm pretty sure they'll get into their sibling rivalries and their arguments, and he'll look at him and you'll think he's weird.
Yeah.
How does that all play into things with him?
It's kind of hard. The two of them are really different. Seth's not into Disney at all, right? He's just into Apex or Elden Ring or whatever he's into.
Video games, yes.
And Daniel is not into that stuff. So in terms of growing up, I think when they were little, they were really, because they're close in age, they were buddies, and there was nothing wrong with that. It was great. They were small together and they did all kinds of stuff together. And then as they grew up and became more independent with their own sort of unique interests, became a little bit tricky. I think that now that Seth's older and he kind of understands more about people and differences, there's been more of an understanding between them. But I feel like there's a lot of accommodating that Seth has to do to keep the peace. But the good thing is he's really where one is very rigid, the other is very flexible. So we lucked out in that department. So Seth is like, whatever, you know, we got 100 times, we're going to watch it. So that has definitely helped.
How is Daniel in making friends? I know you said he's got trouble. Does he have any friends?
He's very outgoing. He's not one of those kids that you have to like encourage to go out there and, be friendly. So he has a bunch of friends from his previous schools. And his previous schools have been more schools with kids that have some sort of quirk, right? So that has been great. His high school that he just left had a program for kids on the spectrum. So that was like a little program within the bigger school. And in that program, he was able to make some nice friends. And, you know, they come to the house and they like watch movies together. So that's been really great. The problem happens when, and I was unaware of this, that in this public school that has this autism program, once you step out of that program, nobody was ready for what was happening. I guess people stayed within their corners, right? So, but Daniel is really into theater and really into musicals. And so he branched out and he decided to join the theater and tried to do musicals and plays, which were great. And he had a great time, but those were all neurotypical kids. And they were not welcoming. They were not taught how to kindly interact. And so there was a horrible bullying situation that happened. So bad, we pulled him from public school and had to put him in a different school. So I think that when you are in an environment where there's modeling behavior, when it's, you know, very structured and very protected, it's easy for Daniel to make friends and, you know, do all that. When he is independent and has no advocates with children that are unkind or insensitive, it's a major fail in that area. So, you know, a part of it is Daniel, but part of it is society and part of it is these kids not being able to handle differences and the school not being prepared. Mm-hmm. For the kids that dare leave that program, right? Like you would think if a school had such a program, then they would train their staff and they would train their teachers and they would train their other students to be more accepting and kind. But unfortunately that is not the case.
I mean, I remember one story. I tried a semester in Columbia College here in Chicago, our theater school. And I signed up to work behind the scenes. I tried to do a monologue to become an actor and I couldn't do that. So I decided to go behind the scenes. And I remember vaguely, I wasn't bullied, but I remember sitting down with a really nice kid who was kind of like told to look after me because they knew something was different. We didn't know I was autistic at the time. And I remember sitting down with him at the end of the show and hearing the applause. And I just remember turning to him and going, how come we don't get recognition as the stage crew? And he just looks at me and he goes, you got to remember one thing, Reed. Without us, there isn't them. And without them, there isn't us. So when they get the applause, we get the applause as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that kind of clicked in my head. It's like, yeah, without stage crew, there isn't anything else.
Right. Right. So, everybody's part of like a machine that works together.
Yeah. But I mean, I've had let him know. I mean, growing up, I was picked on too in high school a lot to where I almost had to pretend to be something I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I was bullied. I was picked on. Even though my older brother went there, kids from my own year picked on me. I mean, I had to give away my lunch money just for protection money
How did your brother help you or how?
No, he graduated, but the senior class knew who I was. There were times where people would try to pick on me and people would jump in front of him and say, you don't want to mess with him. He's Barry Miles' younger brother. A lot of the girls in school knew who I was. So, I mean, I was that, but I was still having problems. I don't know if you had this with Daniel when he was growing up, but when I was in high school, my parents would constantly get calls saying Reed couldn't sit still in class, except for one class, his general science class. So yeah. I wasn't able to focus on anything. My mind would always wander. Even to this day, if I was put in a room with an on-time test, any little sound would distract me.
Yeah.
Does he have that same thing where any little thing would distract him?
Yeah. I think he does feel overwhelmed when there's a lot of stimuli. I think he definitely needs a person to, you know, remind him of the task at hand, especially during an exam. But for Daniel, like, he has this big fear, his anxiety of not completing it or not getting it all right. So that makes him frozen. So that worries him. And then, you know, instead of being distracted, it's like this fear of not getting 100 that then makes him stop, and then he can't do the test or whatever it is. And then he has to be encouraged to, like, continue to at least get to the end. So
kind of like the feeling I get at times when I'm taking a test and then I see someone finish before me. And I feel like, why did they finish before me? We're doing the same test.
Yeah.
What am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
What am I not understanding?
Well, also because you're so aware of everything that's going around you, right? Yeah. Like, if I was taking a test, I probably wouldn't notice, you know, and I would just be like, okay, I finished it this time. But when you have that heightened awareness, it's like, you know, that person is finished and you know, that person is, like, really struggling with the question. Why am I not struggling with that question? And so all that is very distracting. And I think he has measures in place. Like, he takes tests in a quiet room, or, you know, he has a proctor or something. And I think within those sort of educational parameters, those things have been set up because there have been so many kids that, like, ADHD is, like, so common now, right? Like, everybody, all the teachers know, put them in the front of the class, you know, repeat the question, ask them, make eye contact, check in. Like, all that stuff is so commonplace that they have all these measures in place, which is, again, like, what I want for autism, right? So, like, if ADHD has been so, like, everybody's got it, why can't we just do that with autism? You know, like, that would make my life so much better.
I mean, my biggest thing is with the educational systems and autism is I wish more schools would have programs for those who are on the spectrum. I mean, back when I was growing up, we knew nothing about autism.
Right.
I was in special ed.
Right. Right.
When I was diagnosed, it was not autism. It was, he had a learning disability.
Yeah.
We didn't know anything about autism until later in life.
Yeah.
I mean, the kids nowadays, like Daniel, I mean, being found out early that now they, because of autism, is something recognized.
Yeah.
It's a blessing.
Yeah. I think we're in a good time for it. I think there's been a shift. And all the numbers are showing there's going to be more and more kids on the spectrum. And I think you're right. I think that there's more programs, there's more schools that are able to handle students, and they have different programs for different things, right? They have your bridge program, or in our area, you know, for the kids that need help emotionally. They have the autism program for kids that are on the spectrum and need smaller classrooms for all the subjects. And they have tutors and pull in and push out, and the IEP program where everybody gets their own individual plan. And so I think that people are starting to learn about it and put in measures to help the students at school. And also there's like a billion special education schools popping up because they know how to do it. And I think that's a great and amazing thing.
I mean, what blows my mind is things are now just coming up with autism in the U.S. But if you look to Europe and all these other countries, they're way ahead of us in treating autism and having special programs for autism. I mean, it's like, why are we so behind when there are so many kids out there who are coming up as autistic? I mean, it's not only kids nowadays, you're finding out this person's autistic and this person just came out and this person just came out.
I don't know. I mean, how old were you when you were diagnosed and how did that
affect? I was in my 20s.
Okay.
It took my mother's cousin, who's a lawyer, noticed that I had traits and told my mom. My mom's other cousin, who's a psychologist, said, I think he's on the high end of the spectrum. And we applied twice for Social Security SSI and got denied. And then my mom's like, that's it. I'm going to hire a law firm, a disability law firm. And they literally said, you're going to be denied twice because they're going to say you're going to be able to do menial labor. Because they know nothing about autism, about the fact that my biggest problem is I have trouble working with people because I tend not to say the wrong thing. And that gets me in trouble. So the third time we had a lawyer from the firm, and she sat down and she's like, okay, we're going to go in front of this judge. And what's going to happen is he's going to talk to you. And then they're going to have a woman from the vocational center come and try to point out different jobs you can do. And it's your job to say why you can't do those jobs. And my mom literally sat there and said, you can't do this because you're working with people. You can't do that. You're working with people. Any one of those jobs on that list, you're working with people.
So it sounds like your mom has been your biggest supporter and advocate. Yeah.
My mom has been a huge advocate of mine too. Literally, she's the one that pushed me to do the blog, the podcast, just like you and your book with Daniel. You're pushing him to advocate for himself. So people recognize who we are as a person.
Well, I love that you said that she was the first person you interviewed on your podcast. That made me so happy.
Well, actually, she's not the first person I interviewed. I did interview a mother who has...
Maybe I misread that.
I interviewed a mother who had two kids on the spectrum and their husband was on the spectrum.
Okay. Wow.
And the daughter who wasn't on the spectrum. So it was... I mean, I've had many parents like you who have kids on the spectrum but aren't on the spectrum. So it's how they see life through their eyes.
I wonder if, so what do you think? I wonder if I were on the spectrum, I would be able to understand Daniel in a different way. Like, do you feel that way with your mom or do you think that?
I think if my mom was my mother or my father, if my mother was on the spectrum, I think she would understand me a little bit better.
Okay.
She'd know why I think the way I do. I think my father was the one who was on the spectrum, but we really didn't know. I mean, he had trouble with spelling and other things. But back in his day, you know, there wasn't any kind of diagnosis for anything.
Interesting. But,
how is he doing today?
He's good. He started his new school and, you know, he doesn't love it yet. It's only been like a week or two. But every day he's like, I'm getting used to it. And we're just trying to help him move on and, you know, learn from it and mostly just finish the school year so we can take a break. You know, summer is good that way, right? We get a nice big break. And I think those are really important for our kids to just, I mean, I do feel that structure is really good to have some place to go every day. But also just having a nice break can help reset. And it's a lot. It's a lot to keep together during the day at school. And then, you know, you just, I forget how hard it is because as old school, they used to have this thing, it was like special visit day or whatever. And the parents had to, not had to, the parents were invited to spend the day with the kids. And so I would go and I would be in school again from 8 to 3 with the, you know, lunch break. And I have to say, I was exhausted, you know, and I mean, I'm not out of shape or anything. I was just really exhausted mentally and like physically. And just, I just wanted to go home and like lay down. And so if I'm like that, you know, it's amazing what all these kids have to do day after day after day. I mean, maybe you build up some sort of stamina because this is what you're used to. But it was just tough. So I'm really looking forward to him finishing the school year, hopefully with a success and, you know, a high note somewhere. And then we can tackle the next year, whatever comes our way.
Now, how did he handle the pandemic with being cooped inside? Because I know I've had a couple of parents I've talked to and they said it was a change for them.
Yeah. So that was tough. It was tough for everyone, I think, you know, just limited activity, just being in the house all the time and like staring at each other. My husband was working from home. I was home all the time with the kids. I think we were really lucky because we have separate areas that the kids can go to. So like my son, Daniel, was in the dining room and my other one was in the kitchen with me, or, you know, so there was like enough space to spread out. Thank goodness. It was interesting in that for school, they had a nice structure and they just did it A days and B days and, you know, Zoomed every day. And, you know, it was very like set up that way. And then the problem I felt was like physical activity. Like we didn't, we couldn't do anything. We did a lot of walking. We walked our dog a lot. But even then, you know, there's people on the trail and like, we didn't know what was okay and what wasn't, you know, and like masking outside and masking inside. And, so for us, it was very, it was a tough time for getting very stir crazy. But as for the academics and stuff for him, he likes structure and order and patterns. And so that didn't really become a problem, which was really lucky for us. And then we didn't get a pandemic dog, but we had a dog from like 2 years before. So that saved us too, right? Mm-hmm. We got to walk the dog. The dog is bored, you know? So that was another benefit. And then I tried to get the kids to go running on the trail. And so we did a little bit of that. And Daniel likes to bike ride. So he did a lot of bike riding.
That's good. I mean, I felt that the pandemic was hard for most of us on the spectrum, because it was like, you go out, you go to school, you have your activities, and all of a sudden, boom, you're stuck in your home. You got to do everything on your computer. You have a more rigid timeline. There is no outside activity. So it kind of stifles the mind to the point where you're stuck and you don't know what to do.
Yeah, there was some of that, you know, it was a lot of hours and hours staring at a computer screen. When we went out and people were in masks, you know, we couldn't understand anybody. I couldn't understand anybody.
Yeah, we get that too here.
Yeah. Like imagine if you had any sort of language processing issue, it's like, what are they saying? You know? And so Daniel was upset that he didn't get to see his friends, but they did do like Zoom hangouts and, you know, it doesn't make up for the real deal, but, it was a hard time and I'm glad that it is hopefully, you know, on the tail end of it all.
Now, does he have problems with like, keeping eye contact at all?
Not as much, he doesn't really have an eye contact issue so much as sometimes I just don't know who he's talking to, because he'll just start talking. And I'm like, wait, was that question for me, for Dad? Like, who are you talking to? But if somebody were to look at him, with Daniel, you wouldn't even know he was quirky until you were like seven sentences into the conversation. And then you're like, that was weird. So yeah, the eye contact used to be a thing, but he sort of picked up on that and has tried to make more contact.
That's good. Let him know he's not alone. I'm also myself an extrovert. And I love going to parties. I mean, my sister-in-law's got a huge family, so we do all the holidays, but I tend to get exhausted by the end of a party. Does he have that same issue where you go out to, say, a family barbecue or holidays of family, he comes home, he's like wiped out?
Yeah. And, you know, we usually kind of figure out, we always have a plan, right? Like if it gets too much for him, he usually will go somewhere quiet and have his headphones on and like have his phone and be chilling out, you know? And it's not like he's avoiding the family. It's just that there's just too much stuff going on. So I think he, in all of our schools that he's gone to, they've really talked about self-regulation and being able to read your engine and all that terminology. And so he knows to find a place. And also he doesn't want to stay as long as we do. And so when he does go off and find a quiet place, then I know he's safe and he knows he's happy because he's just doing his thing. And then we can hang out for a little bit longer. So, but he does, it's a lot, you know, it's a lot to sort of pay attention to what people are saying. And I mean, I get exhausted.
Yeah. Now, does he have any idea what he wants to be when he grows up? I mean, does he have an idea of occupation for himself?
Well, he was going to work at Disney. And I think what he would really like to do is develop roller coaster or theme ride. No, not roller coasters. I think it's theme rides. Very immersive experiences, and or redo some of the rides with his, you know, interpretations, or, you know, make them better this way or that way. So I know that that's something he wanted to do, is work for Walt Disney. Hey, shout out Walt Disney.
So he wants to be an Imagineer.
Yeah, I think so.
That would be cool. I mean, that's something I wanted to be when I was growing up. I remember I had this great idea for a ride and I emailed him one day and I get an email back and saying, I'm sorry, we don't take outside suggestions from people. It's all our suggestions come from our Imagineers. Mm-hmm. So if you want to help, please apply to become an Imagineer.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe that's what he can do, you know?
That would be fun.
Yeah.
But anyways, that was Corey Yasuno, a mm-hmm. mother who's got a son on the spectrum and an author. Thank you very much, Corey.
Sure. If you want to find me online, you can find me at Corey Yasuno, KuriYasuno.com, and on Instagram too. Everything is KuriYasuno.
And I'll leave the links down below and the link to her book too, everyone. So see you in the next one.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's the way things used to be. I'm no big fan of now. I must have some sweeter memories somewhere in the cloud. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Shout. Welcome to the new normal. Out.
Gonna miss all you used to be. Gonna miss all you had. Consigned to the dustbins of history, like opinions from your dad. You can talk to the freaks. You can talk to just about anybody you happen to meet. It ain't what it was, and it is what it is. Time to move.